all the critics always just say, well, if the Chinese cars are good, it's because they're subsidized, or it's because of, you know, they have what some might call slave labor in their supply chain. And it's like, well, that last thing obviously is very troubling and problematic and awful. But yeah. there's the subsidies are part of it, but that's only part of this success, right? It's that these brands are, yeah, and their technology, they're getting legitimately good on their own. Hello again, and welcome to the Plugged In podcast from Inside EVs, a weekly news show about the future of transportation. I'm Patrick George, editor-in-chief of Inside EVs.
And I'm Tim Levin, senior reporter at Inside EVs. We're off for the holidays this week, so instead of the regular news, we're going to be talking all about the Chinese EV industry with the help of a very special guest, Inside EVs staff writer Kevin Williams.
Kevin's our China guy. I think he knows more about Chinese EVs and Chinese cars than just about any other American journalist working the scene today. He was in that country twice this year at one of their biggest auto shows and testing some of their most important new models. And we're going to talk to him about what the U.S. and the rest of the world can expect as China gets better and better at this stuff. Kevin, welcome to the show, sir.
Awesome. Hey, guys. How's it going?
We're good, man. We're good. How's your holiday season been going so far?
Oh, it's great. I am so tired, but we're almost here, right?
Almost there. Yeah, that's the thing. I think, Tim, you were saying, like, one of your relatives, you were like, oh, you write about electric vehicles. Is there enough to write about? And we were all just exactly. All of us are so tired all the time.
Yeah, wish there was a break where there was just no news, right? But it's just constant churn.
All the time. The churn is real.
Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, this is like a preview for our next week's holiday episode, but we were going back and looking at all the stuff that happened this year in EVs, and it was great. You know, it was like 5 years of news packed into 12 months. So yeah, there's been plenty, and a lot of it has been revolving around this like immense rise of the Chinese EV world.
Yeah, I'm excited to chat with you about that, especially Kevin. Like, you know this stuff better than anybody. Let's give our listeners a bit of backstory about you and how you came to cover this scene. You and I started working together a couple of years ago, but like, what got you interested in covering China specifically and the Chinese EV scene?
Yeah, it's so funny that people always, this is like the third time people have asked me this question, and I never know. I feel like I give a different answer every time. You know, I used to post a lot on car forums. And it was kind of interesting because I would get made fun of a lot on car forums. This would have been like the late 2010s. Hmm. So like back when, like, you know, Chinese cars were complete crap. And I was like, hey, look at this brand. It's kind of interesting. You know, they're doing some really interesting stuff. And, you know, everybody, you know, the old internet, you know, they're just going to dogpile on you. Oh, these cars aren't very good. Why are you wasting your time with that? It's just all fake clones. And then sometime around like the mid 2010s, like, you know, they started shifting kind of quickly from, oh, this is kind of clone crap, to, huh, this is not half bad. Yeah. And I started, and I felt like, you know, when I was telling people, like, hey, these brands are starting to make things that look, you know, fairly competent. They haven't really exported too much yet, but what they're making doesn't look half bad. And I felt like I was kind of screaming at air.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, I feel like, hey, there's something going on here in China, and I think you need to watch it. And everyone's just kind of like, nah.
So, yeah, nobody took that scene seriously for years. It was like you said, it was, I remember when some of the early Chinese automakers would put cars at the Detroit Auto Show, and it was always in the lobby, right? It was never on the main floor. And it looked like, you know, a Corolla built under communism, and they had goofy names,
yeah,
and just like, yeah, like they didn't seem impressive. It was like 10 years behind a Hyundai. And then all of a sudden, this stuff came out of nowhere. It's like, oh, you didn't know? It's like, it's a great, you know, that's, so that's like recently we caught on to it, right?
Yeah. And it's kind of a little frustrating for me because, like, you know, there's so many big brands in China, you know, they've been selling their wares literally millions by the boatload for decades now. And they just kind of, it's a little frustrating to see when they talk about how they feel blindsided by, you know, the rise of the Chinese auto industry, because like it didn't come from nowhere.
Yeah.
Okay. Like you would have had to pay, if you've been paying attention, this rise is fascinating, but it's not that shocking.
But I would say, like, I think it's a good segue to kind of give the backstory here. And like, maybe it's been going on for a while, but it has really accelerated, you know, like in the last, what, 5 years, maybe 10 yeah, years. But
I agree.
Like, but it's gotten to the point where, like, for the people who don't know, you know, the Chinese auto industry in general was kind of not relevant. You know, they were never Germany or Japan or the US. They didn't make a ton of cars. They didn't export a ton of cars. And then just recently, pretty much in the last 5-10 years, they've kind of emerged as this huge global powerhouse, and specifically around EVs and batteries, and the battery supply chain. And it's gotten to the point where, you know, the rest of the auto industry is very terrified of these Chinese car companies, because they're coming into Europe and they're coming into South America and Southeast Asia, and they're taking over within China, all these places where, you know, the incumbents, the European automakers, Americans, American automakers, Japanese, they have like ruled basically for decades. And so, you know, yeah, they really have been blindsided by this. Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see how it plays out. But right now, the Chinese car company, or China, is the biggest exporter of cars in the world. And that's a new thing. That's in the last like year or so, right?
I think it's worth noting also, like, how did this market come to be? And like, Kevin and I talk about this a lot, both on the site and sidebars with each other. But, you know, that industry sprung up because other automakers, I believe, like, starting with Volkswagen in the 80s, like, they came into that market. They partnered, sometimes by law, you're forced to do this, partner with a local company in a joint venture, and you were making cars for the Chinese market. And for the longest time, like, you know, that country's economy was nowhere near what it is today. So, like, these were small, very cheap. They were just aimed at China. China starts rising in the world. More companies like BMW, Mercedes come in, and they're like, we're going to build these things locally. We're going to, you know, import our cars. Because people love Western vehicles. But in the last couple of years, especially, after working with the Western and other Asian automakers so long, something happened in China. It's that they learned how to do all the stuff we know how to do, and they're actually getting better at it, especially batteries and EVs. And Kevin, I think you want to elaborate on that a little bit. Like, they kind of took what the stuff they learned from these companies, including Tesla, and really ran with it, right?
Yeah. There's the joint venture scheme, I think, really did help a lot of brands learn. Some will claim that, you know, that's basically stealing IP. Others, I don't know. I think the jury is out a little bit on that. But yeah, they really took a lot of things from these established car makers and really kind of made it their own. That's one of the big things I noticed in China. I think Chinese brands, how can I put it? It feels like, for a long time, China didn't really have a sense of taste when it came for vehicles. By that, I mean, like, you know, they were kind of happy to buy whatever was given to them, because, like, they don't know any better. Like, if you look at, like, you know, some of the early models that came to China, like, you have the Volkswagen Santana, which is like the old Volkswagen Dasher Quantum. And then Buick was also one of the first brands to enter China. And they entered China with basically the old Buick Century from the 2000s that they had shoved a Cavalier motor in and a manual transmission in. And that's not a good car. Come on.
It doesn't sound half bad. It sounds kind of fun. The Buick with a stick shift, Cavalier. It's just, I don't know.
I'm absolutely not. No. But I think my point is, like, you know, they kind of were, it just seems like, you know, China was just kind of very much, you know, content to buy whatever because they didn't know any better. But now they kind of do. You know, they have ideas of what they want in a vehicle. They know what they would want to pay, what kind of features that they want. And it seems that a lot of the Western automakers don't necessarily know that.
But they can't build cars to Chinese tastes the way that the homegrown brands can, right?
Yes, correct. Correct. Like, the homegrown brands are just really, really good at figuring out what that client is and meeting that need.
And you've driven a bunch of these cars. I want to ask you all about that. But like, what do Chinese buyers want? What do they want? They're getting from BYD or XPeng or NIO that like BMW and Volkswagen and so on are not giving them anymore.
It's kind of interesting because it feels like a lot of the Chinese buyers are very similar to American ones. You know, they're very value oriented, so they want a lot of stuff for their money.
Yeah.
You know, they want a smooth ride. They want a lot of space. Stuff that we kind of want here in the United States, which is such an interesting thing, right? Mm-hmm. But the Chinese automakers are just really good at giving them that.
Yeah. You know, in one of your stories recently, I think you wrote something like, you know, it's like these are the same buyers, like it's the same people. They even go to the same like fast food chains over there. Like it's the vibe is a little similar to America, right?
Yeah, it was so crazy. Like this past trip when I was in I was with NIO and we were going to their factory, in somewhere in the countryside of China, and we were in this high speed train, and it was so weird because it felt like I was in West Virginia. With a smattering of high rises. It was very surreal. Like it really is kind of the same country. Like I was fortunate enough to be able to drive in China this time. And it's so interesting how American the roads feel in China. Everything is wide. China's actually also one of the few countries in the world you can make a right turn on red.
Oh wow, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Mm. Which is very, very interesting, right?
Yeah.
Wait, a right turn or a left turn?
Right. Yeah, but you can't do that in Europe. You can't do that in most of the world.
Got it.
Yeah, but, five boroughs in New York City won't let you do that either. But
yeah, pretty much the U.S. and Canada and then China are like one of the three places you can do that, which is really nice. So
I want to ask about like EV stuff specifically, because it's not just like, oh, the cars are good. And you write a lot about like, oh, these things are really advanced. Like, what does that mean to you? Like, that these are advanced EVs? We talking like range? We talking software features, performance, all of the above? Like, where are we at versus like the best of what we have in America with electric cars specifically?
I think what I mean specifically with advanced is just how ubiquitous everything is in China. Even with our reporting at Inside EVs, it feels like every time we talk about an EV here, it's just like such a big event. Like, oh my gosh, look at how fast this thing can charge. Look how much range it can do. Like we always have to convince the reader and the consumer that these things are the real deal. Versus in China, it's just kind of like accepted. Like everybody knows.
They're just cars.
They're cars. Like the first time I went to China in April for the Beijing Auto Show, basically I think I talked to the head of Zeekr. You know, we had a little roundtable meeting, and he basically said that one of the issues that Zeekr was facing is that people don't really care about range and charging times in China anymore. Like it's just not they have to sell the car on something else, because like every car charges fast enough, every car goes as far as you need it to. So how do you differentiate your product from someone else?
Wow.
Yeah, they're asking questions like that, and we have not gotten that far yet.
No,
but like
Yeah, so like one of the things that we hear a lot, and I think we've talked about, is like, you know, these Chinese EVs are known for having super high quality, like super high build quality, more than, you know, your average American would expect from like a Chinese car, and also very, very advanced and like intuitive software and kind of more tech-based features. Is that something that you've like felt firsthand?
Yes.
Well, I guess, and I should say all of that, I think the most impressive thing is that all of that at a good cost, right? At a value and at a cost of build that's lower than what the rest of the world can do.
Yep. I think once again, back to that ubiquitous part, like every single car, you know, brand new car, electric vehicle I got my hands on in China, they all had these like, you know, really thoughtful software interfaces, every single one. And they were a lot of times they were self-developed. Or if they weren't self-developed, they were like using a full stack suite from like someone else. Like Huawei is a really good example. They kind of do full stack solutions for a lot of Chinese EV brands. And it all worked really well. It all looked really pretty. It was all super responsive. And I just think about some of the trials and tribulations I've had in American EVs, and it was frustrating.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, totally.
Because like even some of the interactions or excuse me interfaces that we've talked about at Inside EVs, I'm like, that's not very good. You know,
yeah,
like I hate GM.
Yeah, like Tesla is well regarded as kind of the very best at this kind of stuff, at user interface in a car. Rivian is up there. And then you know, there's varying degrees of success with the kind of legacy automakers, but a lot of them are really kind of behind in the sense that, you know, the software isn't that much more advanced or different than it was like 5 or 10 years ago.
Totally. Not just behind, but it's not clear if they even know how to fix it.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah, because part of the problem is from what I've understand, what you've reported too, it's like these our car companies are not set up that way. It's that one of the biggest advantages Tesla has and it has had is that it's totally vertically integrated as a company. They make all the cars, they make the parts, they make the software, they make the chargers. It's all integrated. And Jim Farley, the CEO of Ford, has complained about this. He's like, I work with like 7,000 different suppliers. I don't know if it's that many, like it should be more. But it's like, if all of the pieces on your car, including the software components on your Ford, they all come from disparate places and they don't always talk to each other and they're not integrated. They don't even use the same software languages. So like getting things updated, making this stuff a modern experience.
Yep.
They're not able to do that.
Yeah, that's something I kind of noticed about China too. It's like, you know, everything is like relatively new. Even if it's old, it's new, right? Like nobody, like China didn't really start building high tech stuff to like what, the 2000s, right?
Yeah.
And I just feel like generally there's not as much entrenched momentum for, you know, processes like that, you know?
Yeah.
So many of these brands, you know, they're more willing to collaborate with, you know, China's car industry is really willing to collaborate with its tech industry because it can do that, right? Like it doesn't have, like it's not so entrenched in like, you know, the throes of car building. There's so many young, talented people in China that are like, you know, they have new ideas, they have new ways of thinking, and they're not necessarily encumbered by what's going on in the past here. Like even going back to example for the, like the software, for example, Geely is a really good example. I spoke with one Geely representative and said, you know, we couldn't figure out how to do software. So instead of like, you know, hiring a few guys, we just decided to go ahead and buy a phone company and let them do it.
Yeah.
And it worked though.
Yeah. That's the level they're playing at, though. That's like General Motors would never. It's like, oh, let's buy.
No.
Like, you know, sure, let's do. Right. That'll fix.
More like the other way around. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. But that's kids, smart. Yeah. But that's smart. Not only was it smart, but it was also fast. Instead of like, you know, wasting years and years and years on a terrible, like, you know, software interface and throwing all these engineers at it and it's not going to be good. Just start over. Do something else. I think that's part of the reason why China is so successful, and like, you know, especially with EVs, you know, just the willingness to pivot and try something new.
Yeah.
Instead of like trying to go where they're not wanted or where it's not working.
Yeah, what I was gonna add is like, and you tell me if this kind of tracks with your understanding of things, but it's like, you know, one of the, apart from the JVs, the joint ventures with these outside companies, one of the big things that has really driven this industry is huge government support. You know, I think we'll put the stat up on the screen or something, but over the last 10 to 15 years, the Chinese government has spent something around $250 billion subsidizing subsidizing the EV industry. And that's, you know, both manufacturer side investments and loans and all that kind of stuff, plus consumer, you know, incentives. And what that's done is it's created this like highly, highly competitive environment where like you have to move fast. If you're Geely, like you were saying, you have to move fast and you have to figure out what the hell consumers want, or else like you're dead, because
you're done.
They've made this industry. It's kind of like a petri dish or something, right? Like they have put so much money into this and so deliberately created this market that, it's moved at like five times the speed of of like the US or European or Japanese. And so they're putting out cars extremely fast. Like they're developing and launching cars within like 2 years or something, maybe even less. Whereas for an American automaker, that takes like 5 years. Same reason, they have to be super competitive on all the software stuff. And they have to be like, we're just going to bang out these features and like give people new stuff because people want EVs. And there's like hundreds, literally hundreds of brands competing, right?
Yeah. Although some of these brands are not making it, it's kind of crazy. I think a couple, like I think even Geely, one of Geely's brands just failed. Like one I saw that they were so proud to show me in April no longer exists.
Which and for those like if you don't know Geely, I think that probably in a few years that's gonna be like household name ish in America. But that's the big Chinese company that owns Volvo as well as Polestar, Lotus now too, and several others, including Zeekr, which you've written about a lot. Yeah, smart. Yeah, Zeekr you've written about a lot was like this, you know, really kind of Polestar ish up and coming, you know, like youth oriented, performance oriented, but like premium brand that's in Europe now. Mm-hmm. Like you were a big fan of their stuff that you've driven, right?
Yeah, I was. That was actually probably the most shocking piece. I mean, it's always one thing seeing them in pictures, but like actually getting experience with them was pretty nice. Zeekr's pretty impressive. I've kind of told the folks at Geely, they probably were mad at me for saying that. It's like, I feel like you guys should just swap out Zeekr and Polestar because Polestar's not making any sense, and it's not. It's stock-wise, sales-wise, just swap the two brands. But yeah, Zeekr was really, really well considered. You know, that's one of the things that I think was really interesting, once again, about Chinese brands. China moves fast, but sometimes it moves a little too fast. Like I think a lot of these big conglomerate companies, they have too many brands. They have too many cars that don't necessarily make any sense or like kind of redundant. But I do think that like, you know, Zeekr and NIO, they're some of the biggest bright spots in the Chinese automotive scene because they just feel so well thought out. Like they have a concrete idea of who their clientele is, of what product they're making, and how it all goes together.
Yeah, consolidation happens. Like that happened in America like 100 years ago and through the 50s and 60s. I mean, you look at like, you know, the brands we used to have, Packard, Studebaker, American Motors, like they all eventually merged into these things now. And then, you know, a third of ours is owned by this, you know, sort of multinational European conglomerate / French private equity company, what I call Stellantis. But like this happens. Like this is just kind of the natural evolution of the market, like survival of the fittest, right?
It is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're kind of throwing stuff at the wall to see what sticks, and now they're figuring out what's sticking, right?
But one thing I wanted to bring up with you too is like you write about this a lot, and I think you've done a really great job of bringing this particular point into the conversation. Is all the critics always just say, well, if the Chinese cars are good, it's because they're subsidized, or it's because of, you know, they have what some might call slave labor in their supply chain. And it's like, well, that last thing obviously is very troubling and problematic and awful, but there's the subsidies are part of it, but that's only part of this success, right? It's that these brands are, and their technology, they're getting legitimately good on their own, right?
Yeah, I would think so. Like, you know, it's to the point where these Chinese cars are being purchased on merit, you know?
Yeah.
Like they're being sold in other countries and they're winning reviews. You know, it's not just like, we're buying this because it was cheap and it was a good deal. It's like, oh, this is actually a very pleasant car to drive. This is something I would like owning. This is something where I feel like, you know, I've gotten my money's worth.
Mm-hmm.
We can't shy away from that fact. Also, like, you know, we also can't shy away from the fact, like, you know, foreign companies still operate in China, and you know, they do benefit from some of the same subsidies and, low labor costs and the same, ethical concerns that Chinese companies do. They're pulling from the same workforce. They're talking to some of the same suppliers. So I don't want to say that it's completely equal, but I think we should be a little honest here.
That's a really good point. That gets lost in the conversation a lot. I mean, it's these same companies are making stuff at those same factories and supply chains. Like, well, they're if there are human rights issues to be had, like the other automakers, Western ones, are equally as guilty of that, right?
Which is interesting, which to me once again just brings it back to, the execution and the quality of the product. Are you making something that somebody wants? And I think unfortunately a lot of Western automakers are learning that the answer is no. And they don't know how to fix it. Which is unfortunate for them, but I mean, I don't care. I mean, I don't work there.
Yeah, it's not our, as I would say, it's not our job to sell these things. I want to shift gears a bit and talk about the last time you were over there. You were in November. You were in China in November. You were driving a lot of the cars from NIO and NIO's new brand Onvo, which, among other things, like their like special attack is like battery swapping, and which is not a thing that we have in the United States. But you tried this. You were impressed by it. Like, give us the download on battery swapping. How's that work,
Oh,
and what do you
man.
think?
I was honestly impressed. I feel so bad for being so impressed with China, because I know I sometimes read the comments. I know what people are saying, but I'm like, this was so cool, my guys. Like, I really thought it was going to be kind of a gimmick, but like they kept like trying to convince me of battery swapping. And like the first couple times, I wasn't paying attention. And like by the time we had like pulled in and pulled out, I hadn't even finished the conversation. Like, we were done. That's how like seamless and quick it was.
Well, tell folks, if you don't mind, how does this work exactly? So, like, if you own a NIO or an Onvo, you roll up to one of those, like, it's like this like metal box that they have, almost like a car wash in America. And then what happens from there?
So basically what you'll do is it's very similar to if you've used like a Tesla and you see, or any sort of like electric vehicle, and you want to do, oh hey, find the nearest DC fast charger, or let's just talk about Tesla. Like, let's find the nearest supercharger, and you navigate there. And then we'll make an appointment. Like, it'll show like, oh, is there somebody in front of you? Or go ahead, right in. Basically, what you'll do, you'll navigate up to the swap station, and then you'll pull into a little box. Like, it's a little painted box on the ground. And then on the car's infotainment screen, a dialog box will pop up, and it's basically asking you, do you want to start the swap now? You'll press the button on the screen. And then the car does the rest. It literally maneuvers itself, it backs itself into the swap station. And then it literally jacks itself up, removes the battery, puts itself back down, replaces it with a new freshly charged battery, and then puts it in, and then you're on your way.
Yeah, and like what's important here is like, normally, I mean, you can charge them too, right? And so, but
Yes,
like
you can.
in general, like EV charging takes forever. It takes like in the best car, like whatever, 20 minutes. Not crazy, but like in the best car, it'll be 20 minutes or so. It could be up to 30 or 40. And NIO has made this like, it's not just one or two, right? It's like a whole infrastructure of these battery swapping stations where, if you're on a road trip or whatever, like you can swap your battery in 3 minutes or so instead of, 20 or 30 or 40. And it's like, this is something that we just don't have. Like, there's a company trying to make this happen in America called Ample, but it's still pilot. Like, this just doesn't exist really outside of China. And maybe NIO's been building these in Europe too.
They have. They've got a couple stations in Europe, but the take rate is not as high. Partially because, like, I was talking to Neo's on PR person. She's just like, I feel like the stations are a little nerfed in Europe. Like, I think they're only open from 9 to 9 versus
Whereas the gas station's open 24/7.
And like the Neo stations in China are also open 24/7. And then there's also some other stuff with like, actual battery stuff. Like, they want to make sure that you're getting the same battery back. So everything's like a little weird. But yeah, NIO has, I think, 2,800 like in China. And I think last I checked, they were at about 59 million swaps that they've done since the brand's inception in 2018. Very wild.
Yeah.
And I, like I said, I was very skeptical because I was like, well, is charging really that easy? Like, is swapping really that big of a deal? But what I liked about it is that, you know, it shuts up so many EV haters and skeptics in one fell swoop. Like, you know, living here in the Midwest, I get so many things. I get so many complaints like, oh, I would never do that. I can't wait at a DC fast charger that long. Call me when I can do this many miles in this many minutes. Mm-hmm. And that you can literally go from flat to full in about as long as it takes to fill up a car with gas. Mm-hmm.
Right. And I was going to say, like, if we're working under this idea that, like, Chinese buyers, turns out they have really similar tastes to Americans, it follows that, like, if the Chinese love this and we got it right, like, I think the Americans would prefer this experience too, right?
Yep. Especially when you add into, so one of the things that NIO and Onvo also do is they do a battery as a service. So you can swap the battery if you buy the car outright. But if you do a battery as a service, basically what you can do is they'll take off like a pretty big discount. It's like 8 to 10 grand, depending on the model. And then you basically lease the battery for, I think, roughly not even $100 a month. But it's a really big incentive to get, you know, people in the car. You know, I think the Onvo L60 is roughly a Tesla Model Y competitor.
Yeah.
The one I drove, if you were to buy the battery outright, it was about $29,000. But if you decide to lease the battery, it was only $21,000.
Jeez. So we're talking about like something very comparable to a Tesla Model Y. And we'll put up photos of this on the YouTube video. I think this car looks great. The L60, I think it's very handsome. Comparable to a Model Y. Very similar interior. Tech features that are maybe just as good, if not better. And battery swapping for $21,000.
About half.
21 price. Grand. Yeah. Well, and in China, it's like more like, if you do like compare apple to apples, it's more like maybe 5 grand cheaper. But still.
Okay. Still. Yeah. That's.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I kind of think, man, like you and I talked about this a lot too. It's like people are like, oh, I'd never buy a Chinese car. I'd never buy that crap. But it's like, well, you're probably saying that on some device that you own that was made entirely or partially in China for one. But also, yeah. I don't think
Americans actually care. I've had this conversation with so many Chinese execs. I was like, you know, Americans talk a lot of BS, but I think the second that they think that they've got a good deal, they'll forget about it. They'll forget about it so fast. And I think that's the scary part for a lot of Western automakers because they know it's true. You know, I think about one of the. I think this was rumored. But I'm pretty sure it's right. But one of the reasons why the Ford Focus was canceled for the United States, like I think it was supposed to be made by Ford's Chinese partner, was going to be imported back into the United States.
No, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Then the tariff for the first round of Chinese tariffs kind of basically killed it in the water.
Yeah.
But I just think about how many other, you know, automakers probably would just be content to import more vehicles from China.
Oh, nobody, yeah, I don't think Americans. Dream, right? If you're Ford or General Motors, just make all of it over there at mega cheap prices, right. Import it here, and it would destroy our manufacturing sector, right. And all those jobs. But like it'd be great profits, you know.
I mean, they're already doing it in Mexico, which is like, you know, not quite as cheap as China, but still not significantly cheaper than what they pay in the United States, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and it's important to mention. I think people might know this, but like we don't really have these Chinese. We have a couple of made in China cars in the U.S., but they're basically shut out and basically will be shut out for the foreseeable future because of a couple of different policies.
Right.
You know, Joe Biden put 100% tariffs on EVs coming from China, so that's going to make them really hard to sell here, even with all those cost advantages. And then there's also a policy in place, or maybe it's going to be in place soon. But in any case, they're basically barring certain types of software that originates in China too. And that on top of the tariffs is just going to mean, I mean, in my view, it's going to be extremely difficult for these cars to come to the U.S. Anytime soon, as long as those policies are in place.
For now, but we have a different government coming in. Like Kevin, I mean, what do you think?
Yeah.
What could happen under Trump, in your view? In Kevin, what do you think?
I think everyone is guessing.
Yeah.
It's it is so funny. Once again, I am writing a piece about this, and it just seems like every time I get on the plane to go to China, something stupid happens. Like the last time I went to China, the first time I went to China, I got off the plane, checked my phone, and they had enacted the 100% tariff. So the brand I was with, you know, the tone shifted from like, oh, maybe we'll bring this to the United States, to what do we do now? And then the next time I got to China, I was literally the day after the election. So it was kind of, and I straight up told the Neo person, was like, I'm not quite sure why I'm here now. Like, I don't know what's going to happen. All the questions I was going to ask you, I have to change them all now because I don't know what's going to happen. But with a Trump presidency, I don't know. I think he says a lot of things. We saw this in 2016, right? Where he would say a lot of things but not really follow through on any of it. So as much as he tries to be like, you know, this China hawk and, you know, anti-China, he's also like very easily flattered.
Yeah.
So true. I would be 0% surprised if, like, you know, some sort of Chinese automaker says something nice about him, and then all of a sudden we've got BYD and Zeekr on our front lawn, right?
Well, then when he was campaigning, I think this is in the spring, because it really didn't come up after that, but he was like, look, if you're going to build cars, you should build factories in America. Like he said that. It's like, these car companies should have factories in America. And I'm sure that was a day of really hard drinking for everyone like GM and Ford to hear that.
And it's also plausible too. I think it was Zeekr and Geely actually came out and said it maybe about 3 months ago, that they were looking to expand some of their, you know, some of the Zeekr brand, and they were going to use existing Volvo factories. So that's the Belgian factory. That could also be South Carolina.
South Carolina. Who knows? Yeah. And the infrastructure is all there. It's just like tariffs and rules preventing this from happening. I still think maybe the funniest possible outcome and like the darkest is like Trump killed the EV tax credits, which slowed down EV sales for all the traditional automakers. But then as part of some wider trade deal he cuts with China, it like lets BYD and NIO and XPeng into America, and like, all of a sudden, like, we don't have any good EVs, but like the Chinese ones are everywhere. Like
which is funny. And it would be funny to see like which brands are winners. Cause I feel like sometimes people read my posts and they think that I like every Chinese EV, and that's not true.
Yeah.
I do think there are a lot of brands that are like not great, but I do think there are a lot of brands that are really good. But it's kind of interesting to see like which brands are going to make it and which don't. Cause there are some cars I got some hands on in China. I'm like, wow, this would be really good. Only to find out that the brand is like really struggling.
Mm. Yeah.
And they really need to export. Cause otherwise there's nothing, nobody wants it. Like the market is like low key oversaturated in China.
Yeah. So tell us if you could narrow it down to one or maybe a few, like which are your top, you know, favorite EV like EVs that you've driven in China, and maybe some that are like not so good that you're like, maybe try again.
I would say by far favorite is still going to be the Zeekr 007.
Tell people what that is.
So it's based on the same SEA platform that's on the Polestar 4. It's basically, if you think about it, it's kind of a Polestar 4 sedan, but it's like an actual traditional sedan. It's nicer than the Polestar 4. I even told you, I actually said this in the Polestar 4 review. So it feels like we've got like the worst version of the Polestar 4 because it's on the same SEA platform, but it only has a 400-volt architecture. It can't charge as fast. It's not as good. Like, it's not a bad car, even though I don't like the lack of rear window. But the Zeekr 007 is just like, you know, dynamically really, really nice. It reminds me of the Lucid Air. Which is, you know, that's high praise.
This is also why I hate sending Kevin Williams to review any cars for Inside EVs in America, because I'm like, I like the Honda Prologue, and he's like, dude, this is, I'm from 10 years in
this
future.
Is horrible.
Like, this is horrible. Like it's like, I'm like, I love my new bicycle, and Kevin like owns an F-35. Like, he's not impressed by anything anymore because he's driven so many of those cars.
Yeah. Like the Zeekr 007 was just literally perfect. It was so perfect that we were on the track And the day had ended, and I says, "Hey, can I take this car out again?" And they let me take it out for like three laps on my own, with no like co-pilot, just like me, just like full sending it. It was great. I also like the smart hashtag three.
Hashtag three. Wow. Not the
I
number
don't know
four or
how that's,
whatever, 4-2, but
yeah.
hashtag three. Yeah.
I don't know how that's pronounced. It might be actually number three, but I'm just going to
Number
say
three.
hashtag three
Yeah.
for
Yeah.
clarity. That's another fun car. It's basically a coupe version of the Volvo EX30. It's a little bit longer.
Oh.
And also, like the Volvo EX30, it has like a stupid amount of horsepower. So it has like, 400 some odd horsepower. It's funny because if you read British media, they have that car over there. They say it has too much power. And I'm like, well, more for me. So,
Wild that the Brits would say that. Usually they love horsepower as much as we do, you know? Yeah.
But also, it's kind of interesting that Geely loves putting like stupid amounts of power under all their vehicles. It's kind of overkill. Like the Zeekr X also has 430 horsepower,
Yeah,
and
jeez.
it's also like really, it's like basically the same size as a Buick Encore. So just picture a Buick Encore with like
Dear
400 some odd
Lord.
horsepower. And I think like the Zeekr 009, the van, they just facelifted it. And I think in top trim, it has 789 horsepower.
Dear God.
Speaking of, I just love those. I was gonna say, like, whenever we see a lot of like pictures of Chinese cars, and they just love these like big futuristic looking like spaceshipy vans, and like we need some of those in America. You know,
We
screw
do, we
like a
re
big 3-row SUV. We need like awesome looking vans.
We really do. That's also something I really like about China too. It's like, they kind of like, I feel like, unfortunately, in the United States and even in Europe too, we're kind of too much on this weird ass nostalgia kick. And we need to think of some new ideas. I'm tired of seeing yet another Bronco or Mustang, or as cool as the Renault 5 is, I'm like, this is an old, like, how many miles can you get out of this, like, retro
Yeah.
craze here?
Like it
Like, can
runs
we
out
do
of
something
juice
new?
after a
Can we, can,
while. And
yeah,
you
can
run
we,
into people
I,
that have no memory of the original anyway, you know?
yes. And I think that's what's happening now. But yeah, back to my original point. Like, I do think that there are some other Chinese vehicles that are not great. Like, even at Geely, like GU, the GU01 was kind of the worst SEA car there. And that brand is dead now. And I felt so bad because like they were so excited to show it off to me, because so GU is a it's a tie-up between Geely and basically Chinese Google Baidu,
Yeah.
and it was basically their self-driving, like, look at our autonomous vehicle effort. And like the autonomous vehicle stuff was definitely really cool, but like the car itself was not great. Like it's clear that they made like a lot of concessions to get all that tech in there. It's like the ride was like kind of busy. The interior plastics were not that great. It was kind of loud. I also wasn't a fan of the Radar RD6, which is basically their truck. It's an electric truck. It was really
Sick name though.
fast, right? It is a sick name, and I think that brand is also dead.
Think so, yeah.
I think they're still making the truck, but I think they've like folded the brand into something else. Like the truck was. I'm very used to American trucks, and I have an idea of what American truck refinement is, and like in it that car didn't have it. There were also some other stuff I saw there at the Beijing Auto Show that just was like, oh, this is not great. Like Netta. Netta was cool. It's also another small EV maker. They're making some big inroads, and I think in Southeast Asia, but I think they're also about to die, unfortunately. I think there is some stuff in the news about how they're like furloughing and not paying workers on the corporate level in an effort to keep some money, to keep the lights on. And I think there's another one. I think it was Dian or Guanming. That car, those cars were they those cars photographed well, but like you got up close, those were not very good.
Hi Fi was another one earlier this year. Human Horizons, they had this crazy, like, it sort of looked like a Nissan GTR almost. I saw one in person in Germany, and it looks insane. It looks like something out of like Mobile Suit Gundam or something like that. And like they've since, I don't know if they're like dead, but like it's not
They're dead.
really, yeah, they're dead.
They're
There you go.
dead.
Yeah,
They
dead.
tried. Yeah, they had they started their Tesla Model Y competitor, and then I think literally put it on sale in Europe and then ran out of money like 3 weeks later.
That one's a shame.
I think they, yeah, it was. I think they tried to ask the Chinese government for money, and the government was like, "Nah, you're done." And then nobody bought anything else about it.
Yeah. Thanks for playing. Go home.
There is another brand. I think it was Polestones.
Something like that. Not Polestar.
Copyright infringement.
Polestones. I think they changed their name because everyone was like Polestones. And I think now it's just called Rocks or something. It's so weird. ROX. Like, it's such a weird brand. Like, the car was convincing, even though it kind of looks like if a Defender was front-wheel drive. But, I was just kind of like, how did you, like, who gave you money to do this? Like, the car isn't bad, but just like, who's buying this? And then if you look at the sales charts, no one's buying it. That brand was funny because when I was walking past at the Beijing Auto Show, I think they thought I was like a buyer from like Nigeria or something, because they wanted to talk export with me. And then when I told them, hey, I'm American, they're like, oh, sorry.
And then they thought you were a journalist, and they really didn't want to talk to you.
I mean, the car was fine. I've read a couple reviews about it and watched a couple reviews, and it's like the car is fine, but it's just kind of like, how many EVs of this shape can you really make, even in China, with all those, with 1.4 billion people? There's just too many offerings.
Yeah. So Kevin, this has been a really, really fascinating chat with you, and I that's why I really love how you've been covering this space. As we're getting towards the end of this, I wanted to ask, we've seen these companies are not invincible, but they are very good. How do the automakers that we know, do they catch up? Can they catch up? Or is the answer to partner with them and learn from them like they did from us once? Like, where do you think this goes in terms of competition?
I don't know how they catch up, honestly. I do think that, you know, a lot of these companies are getting a leg up from the Chinese government that we're never going to give them, unfortunately. So I do think that, you know, the future is probably going to be collaborative.
Yeah, you know,
I see a world where the future is where a lot of Western automakers end up cooperating with their joint venture partners in China a lot closer. Like, I think about, you know, this Nissan Honda collaboration that may or may not happen, that neither side is like will come out and say. I was like, what if they're both their shared Chinese partner, Dongfeng, just decided to do it instead? You know, like what would that sort of synergy look like?
Yeah.
Where all three are tied together and they're kind of like building EVs.
Yeah, and Stellantis is doing this in Europe with a joint venture is called Leap Motor. You know, and they're
with
basically
Leap Motor.
They're bringing Chinese EVs to Europe. If you can't beat them, have them join us seems to be
and it seems to be working, because once again, you know, these cars are coming to pretty strong reviews.
Yeah.
Which is and also Volkswagen interesting, because
XPeng as well.
Yeah. Volkswagen's doing something with XPeng. The interesting thing about Leap Motor, because I remember looking at those vehicles when I was in Beijing and I wasn't all that impressed. So I was pretty shocked to see that they got decent reviews.
Yeah.
But maybe, I don't know, maybe on the road they're different. But basically I see a lot of collaboration. I see a lot of, I think the Chinese government doesn't want it to be a sort of zero sum where, you know, China takes everything. But I do think that they want more collaboration and better relations with everyone else.
That makes sense. Yeah. Last question I'll ask, and I'll see if Tim wants to add anything too, but what's on your radar for 2025 on the China beat? What are you looking for next year?
Hopefully we'll be at the Shanghai Auto Show and driving more cars.
Yeah.
Ideally, I would love to drive some stuff here in the United States. I know there's a gaggle of Chinese cars floating around the United States. Right now, most of my China vehicles have been sort of higher end. You know, Zeekr and Nio consider themselves Acura and BMW competitors. So I would love to drive something a little bit more mainstream.
Yeah.
You know, we talk a lot about these cheap Chinese EVs, but I think we actually haven't driven them yet, if you get my drift.
Yeah.
So that'll be fun. Like, are these cars as impressive when you take some of the stuff out? Because I mean, I don't want to say it's easy to build a nice luxury car, but easy to impress someone that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, and it's interesting. I think we should leave it there, but we went a whole episode, I think, without mentioning or at least talking very much about BYD, which is like the really big Goliath here, you know, the biggest Chinese EV maker. And so we'll have to
Yeah.
have you back on, and we'll have to do like maybe a full episode just
We'll
about
have to
BYD.
because I have some thoughts about BYD and I feel like we're kind of misrepresenting them. I'm not going to say I'm not impressed, but I do think that people are impressed for the wrong reasons.
Man,
I think that's a good teaser.
yeah, we'll be hitting you up for another guest spot next year. Kevin Williams, best of the business. Thank you for joining us today. Really happy to have you on, man. Thank you.
Awesome. Great being here.
Thanks for listening to the Plugged In podcast from Inside EVs. Remember, new episodes drop every Friday on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and any other platform where you find your podcasts. Our producer has been Mike Perkins, and this podcast is from the Motorsport Network.
Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a review. It'll really help us out. And if you liked what you heard, you can find us on your favorite social media platform or check out all of our latest coverage, including all our China stuff on insideevs.com. See you next time.
Thanks for listening.